Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are on this beautiful planet of ours. Welcome to Sustainability in Your Ear. This is the podcast conversation about accelerating the transition to a sustainable carbon neutral society. And I'm your host, Mitch Ratcliffe. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Over the past 23 years, our guest, Peter Fusaro, has been a leading force in the green economy. His very exclusive Wall Street Green Conference has been a hot ticket for investors and executives looking for sustainable paths forward. And this year marks a milestone as the Wall Street Green Conference will go global with the Wall Street Green Digital Summit on October 15th, 2024. This 12-hour marathon online event will bring together practitioners, investors, and green-thinking startups from around the world through a virtual platform. The show will take place on a rolling schedule from Singapore to Saskatchewan and Sydney to Seoul. The summit will showcase groundbreaking products, services, and ideas aimed at helping the planet and the green economy thrive. The global economy will facilitate connections between investors and managers to encourage business success built on sustainable development. And attendees will include venture capitalists, family wealth managers, startups in the green economy, government officials, corporate sustainability officers, and media. And by the way, Earth 911 is a Wall Street Green media partner. Now let's explore Peter's journey, the highlights of the upcoming summit, and the critical issues facing the green economy. You can learn more about Wall Street Green Digital's event at wallstreetgreendigital.com. Wall Street Green Digital is all one word, no space, no dash, wallstreetgreendigital.com. Now, right after this commercial break, we'll talk with Peter. Welcome to the show, Peter. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Mitch.
Well, hey, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. You've been a leader in the green business discussion for 23 years ago. What was it that possessed you to start Wall Street Green, the conference, back in 2002?
Well, a nice lady came to me and said, we got to do a conference on megawatts, which was a typo, as many people think, from Amory Lovins. And I said, no, that's just too narrow, having a conference only on energy efficiency. So we broadened the topics into renewable energy and carbon. So it really was three legs of a stool, which we did for about 10 years. And I called it the triple convergence. And we've seen, you know, ebbs and flows in carbon markets. We've seen renewables cost reductions of 95% for solar, so more deployment. You know, some things take time to gestate. But what I like to do, and I've had about 9,000 people come to the summits, is convene. We want people to meet other practitioners with solutions to climate, not theory. We don't really bring in academics or government officials. It's folks in the field that are doing many different things with technology and finance.
Well, what are some examples of the types of investors and companies that have attended the conference over the years, the physical conference in particular?
We've had a number of fund managers showing new strategies in long short for public equities and renewables and clean tech. We've had private equity managers, venture capitalists in clean tech and energy tech. We've had a number of family offices come why to learn about new ideas for investment opportunities. We've had a lot of corporates come over time. I look at corporates a little differently. My lens is they'll be buying the technology companies. Mm-hmm. They will not be creating the technology companies. I call it the big pharma model because they really are risk averse. And really, I'm very engaged in startup land. I call it, there are 78,000 startups in the United States. Yeah. We are pretty a risk tolerant culture. And so a lot of these startups eventually will be revenue generating commercializing, and then acquired and trade sales by big corporations. I don't see a very active IPO market.
That's an area that I've seen a lot of activity, is this growing consolidation, not just of the green economy, but of the economy as it knits itself together in this new global and local combination. How do you envision the future of corporate participation in society? Is it like Neal Stephenson imagined, that there'd be two or three major corporations battling for control of the planet. Where do you see us going in that?
Not quite that bad, but I've always said the irony of deregulation, specifically in the electric utility industry, was consolidation. You know, this thing is going to be more competition, actually less competition. We've seen a lot of mergers and acquisitions, even recently again in the oil and gas patch. And so what I see is more consolidation, more globalization, and it's not one size fits all, but more strategic investing. Yesterday BP pulled out of wind power and fired a bunch of people. So there's been fits and starts, even in the renewable patch. Wind is having some teething problems, I'll call that, particularly offshore winds. But solar is here to stay.
Yeah.
New technologies like building integrated photovoltaics, that solar in the window is going to be the next generation of solar, particularly in places where I live in New York City with 950,000 structures. There's no place to put solar farms here, but you can put it in the skin of the buildings. So there's going to be newer technology coming to pass. And as I said, more globalization, more consolidation, it's just inevitable.
How do you see the major tech platform companies playing in that space at this point? Because of course, you know, all of them have very aggressive sustainability goals. But as they approach those goals and consolidate various companies and relationships, what's their role in the economy and particularly in the context of all the conversation about the power of those platforms we're having right now?
Yeah, here's the thing about the tech companies. They really reside on server farms, which are 2% of energy demand, now projected to be 8% of energy demand in the United States by 2030. So they do have a role, but it's not significant in terms of greenhouse gas reduction. Energy is 73% of greenhouse gases. We're step back, we're talking 2% of 70% for the tech companies. They're very active in sustainability initiatives, but they're really small potatoes. They're not big players. They're big players as investors. They're very active investors, Google Ventures, Microsoft. They are investing, but their footprint's actually quite small.
So why is 2024 the right time to take Wall Street Green Digital to go online with this 24-hour event?
Basically, because what's occurring in the markets is the technology now is coming from everywhere. I've been speaking to venture capitalists now in India, which has 66,000 startups. Mm-hmm. Australia, Japan, Singapore is becoming a leading venue for tech companies. And then, of course, the U.S., Western Europe have had active carbon regimes going on for decades. So there's a lot of movement globally now, east, west, and north, south, to industrialize, to basically leapfrog better technologies. We saw the same thing with cell phones when people didn't have to go to landlines, they went to cell phones. Same thing's going to happen. We have an energy deficit of about 1.3 billion people without electricity. So that's a ripe market, particularly in South and Southeast Asia and Africa. So there are markets, opportunities where you can actually bring the technology in. What happened in solar with the cost reductions, it became globally deployable. Before it was just too expensive. And the game, as a friend of mine calls it, bending the cost curve.
Globalization has been followed by the dissemination of the capacity, the technical capacity, and the business experience necessary to create these startup hotbeds. Silicon Valley is no longer the center of innovation globally. It's just one big island. How, as we develop a green economy, do you envision geopolitical power changing? Are we going to fall behind as a country in the United States because we're not making as aggressive as investments as other parts of the world potentially?
Well, that's not really true. I mean, the number I saw last week for decarbonization of the global economy will be $250 trillion by 2050. The spend last year was $1.7 trillion. So do the math. We have a long way to go on really changing the world to a sustainable future. It's going to take a lot of time. Secondly, I don't see the U.S. falling behind at all. In fact, I can make an argument. New York City has become a climate tech center. It's a hub. Not only do we have an event called Climate Week, which is 600 events in September, but we have a new university, Cornell Tech, on Roosevelt Island. We have another climate school growing on Governor's Island. They're putting money into the Brooklyn Army Terminal as a climate tech incubator and accelerator. So what we have here is an ecosystem. We have finance, we have media, we've got legal, and now we have tech, which you wouldn't think of New York City as a tech center, but New York City is number two in venture capital in the country, number two. So there's a lot of capital that comes here.
And it's encouraging to hear that assessment, because too often we do hear that we're just not taking action. Can you characterize, at the broadest level, obviously, how far you think we are as an industry or as a business community toward a sustainable or regenerative approach to conducting our business?
The low-hanging fruit was operational efficiencies. Most companies mm-hmm. have already done that. The harder lift is actually deploying new technologies in the supply chain to start measuring what we're emitting. Mm-hmm. Methane is getting a lot of ripe technology opportunity, because methane is about 80 times the carbon intensity. CH4 is the molecule. And we're starting to see a lot of activity there. It's important because it's additive to greenhouse gas emissions, much more than carbon dioxide. So I'm seeing like patches. It's not one size fits all. I see a lot of activity in carbon capture and storage, but that is very long dated and very expensive. The real game is, how do I make the batteries from different materials that don't emit heat? So like lithium ion. I heard about lithium iron batteries. I don't know much about that. I just learned that this week. I worked on the Prius with Toyota 27 years ago. And so I'm a big advocate of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. There you got the problem of no infrastructure and cost. It's $10 to $12 a kilogram. Got to get it down to about two, and there's no infrastructure. So all the original equipment manufacturers on the planet can make hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, but there's no market. So you have to build the market. It's going to come. And the reason that's important, although EVs are kind of crowding out the space now, is that EVs are using electric power, some of it generated by coal.
Yeah.
People don't understand. It's not clean. I think clean coal is an oxymoron, actually.
Oxymoron might be putting it lightly. It may just be a plain old lie. but as you say, we are in the process of instrumenting our economy so that we understand the impact that it has. But as we measure those impacts become commodified themselves. In other words, the green transition is going to be accompanied by the financialization transition even more deeply than it currently is. And as you put together Wall Street Green Digital, you have a capital introductions program. Tell us about how you're connecting money to create those opportunities to measure and commodify sustainability.
What happened was, my friends in the hedge fund industry actually built a technology platform for what's called capital introductions to hedge funds. Mm-hmm. They offered that to me. They're my partner, full disclosure, Hedge Connections, their name, out in Bend, Oregon. And what I've set up is 22 verticals in climate tech. So investors, and there are 12,000 accredited investors on the platform already, but I want to broaden this to strategic investors, family offices, sovereign wealth on one side. So they get on for free because they're the ones deploying capital. The startups, of which I've mentioned, the 78,000 in the US, the 66,000 in India, there's another company in Singapore is running 1,000 startups. So mm-hmm. I'm looking even like get 10% of that audience and bring them on board. All I'm doing is making meetings. Folks get meetings. Anyway, the point is, people can choose what investment you're interested in, be it energy mm-hmm. storage, aquaponics, carbon capture and storage, e-mobility, et cetera. And I was at an event yesterday speaking, and every single hub, like there's something called the Blue Haven Hub up in New Haven, Connecticut now. They all said, I like this idea and the VCs like it because I'm going to feed them. Because this will be basically an incubator of incubators, because we're talking about investments from 50,000 to 5 million, very early stage, pre-seed, seed, up to A round. So I kind of fell onto a winner. And here's the other thing. There are competitors, which is very good. Mm-hmm. It's good to have competition. I'm also been a judge in the CleanTech Open for the Northeast for several years. And then they always come and say, startups say, we have no competitors. That's never true. They always have competition.
Yeah.
So I actually think I'm onto something bigger. So what I've got this week, I've got a guy scraping through AI a lot of the companies. And I've just brought an intern on from China. She's in Shanghai right now, a NYU student. And we're just, some of this has to be manual. Most will be automated. But if you think about addressable market, at least, let's just say 250,000 startups globally, at least that much. And I'm touching Israel, I'm touching the UAE, Singapore, Europe. And the other thing I wanted to mention, by the way, is a lot of the European companies, Australian companies, Singaporean companies are now setting up US offices for green tech. And it's almost like a tsunami. Yesterday, another Italian VC came in. So we've got Western Europe, Singapore, Australia, very active in the US markets now.
Now, the digital agenda covers a wide range of sustainable business issues, everything from energy storage and to sustainable fashion. Where do you think the biggest areas of activity, especially in terms of the conversation during the event, are going to be in 2024 and 2025?
I tried to kind of regionalize it if I could. So the Middle East section is more on deep tech. The fashion, obviously, is Europe. So I'm really trying to make it more of a global sustainability summit. I'm coming from the energy patch, and now I'm just broadening it out. I've also diminished ESG. I've decided we don't need so many speakers on ESG investing. A few are fine. But I'm also looking for some strategies from managers. So we'll have funds talk, because that always is topical. People, I used to always put them last at my conference, so people would hang around to the end of the conference. Oh, I wonder what the funds are up to. And so I'm talking about private equity funds, venture capital funds, not so much hedge funds. They're really not as active as they were in the green space anymore.
I think this is a great place to take a quick commercial break, but I want to dig into a lot of things that we're talking about. We'll be right back. Now let's get back to our conversation with Peter Fusaro, who is founder of the Wall Street Green Conference and host of the upcoming Wall Street Green Digital Conference, a global event that's going to be taking place on October 15th, 2024. So Peter, as you just said, you're looking to address a lot of islands of sustainable business activity. How is engaging with participants from Singapore, Saskatchewan, Sydney, Seoul, and the other cities that you're going to be visiting over the course of the day allow us to begin to bring those islands into contact so that we have, for lack of a better word, a continent of green business activity?
That's actually a very good title. It is a continent of green business activity. And the idea is to highlight these centers of excellence. Singapore is very big, not just on technology. It's become a carbon hub, a nature-based solutions hub, a lot of activity going on in Southeast Asia. India, which I haven't touched on yet, has also been very active in technology, as we all know, AI and machine learning, et cetera. But they're also getting active in technology companies through venture. And similarly,
well, in India in particular, is the first country with a true digital public infrastructure. And that's, I think, that makes them a testbed for a lot of the things we're talking about.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I didn't even thought about that. You're absolutely right. So the point is, we regionalize some of this, and then we globalize it because it's 30 speakers, 12 hours, and people, and it'll all be taped so people can see it afterward. There'll be an aftermarket. Sure. They can see what's going on. I've uploaded about 200 videos from my former summits. What I did learn, though, it's always a lessons learned. So I tried to do a hybrid event a year and a half ago. It was a total failure, because either you're going to do it in person or you're going to do it online. You can't do both. And I learned that the hard way.
Well, it's a good lesson to learn. I having run physical conferences and online events, they are different creatures entirely. Thinking about the localities again, how does a global conversation help a local business encourage a grassroots approach to growing this economy, which is really contextually related to the locality in which everything needs to happen? I mean, we have global policy and what actually happens on the ground. How are we going to bring those things together through the event?
Well, we're really not the global government. We're just a global platform. So the idea is the knowledge transfer. Like I said, not one size fits all. People can pick and choose what session they want. And I doubt anybody's going to be there 12 hours, myself and Robin. So the point is, you pick and choose what you want. We're covering Latin America as well. There's a hub down there, 40 clean tech hubs in Latin America. The State Department is funding. I've already talked, it's based in Colombia, the country. And so I don't have an answer for everything because still coming about, but it's going to be a typical Peter Fusaro production with a lot of very smart people sharing their knowledge and their dynamic speakers. I look for communication skills. You know, you don't want somebody reading a speech or what happened last night. You don't want that kind of deer in the headlights type of thing.
For folks who are listening, we're referring last night to the presidential debate, which was kind of like having somebody read their slides. So how much will a attendee have to pay to participate in the online event? What's the cover charge?
Low price point, $25. I won't make it free because you lose half your audience for free events. They don't show up. But if you have a little bit of money, then people are reminded and they're also cued in. We're using some new technology, but there'll be many messages, events coming up, weeks, days, hour. So it's $25. That's it.
That's a great price. Is this a good resource for the everyday investor or the environmentally minded company founder to attend in order to tap into these ideas as well as the network?
Only if they have an open mind, because we're really not focusing on public companies. Mm-hmm. Really looking at the privates, the new tech that's out there. Some of them, you know, are just getting traction in capital markets, but all of them have solutions. So it's in it. I had 19 of them in March. I don't think it's going to be as that many, but for investors, it's sort of like, you know, an eye opener. This is what's on the table coming up. It's not like, well, we've done this already. So I've already heard that story. It's actually brand spanking new.
Well, you know, you mentioned that we already have about 250,000 startups around the world. As work evolves, because of the connectivity that we have now, AI and other things that allow individuals or small groups to do so much more, do you envision a world in which a job becomes kind of passe and starting a company, which might be a service provider to another company or a group of companies, is the norm? How do you imagine? And that's the question for the individual investor, is they're also thinking about their own prosperity.
It's really hard to say because we don't really understand the model of working at home and working in the office. And obviously, today, Midtown Manhattan's barren. I mean, who's here are tourists, 66 million tourists, but we don't, very few office workers. So I don't know the happy medium. One of the CEO I've been talking to is thinking maybe bringing people back Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the office.
Yes.
You know, many years ago, they gave me a laptop in 1989, so I became portable. And then when I was a consultant to Bloomberg LP, they gave me something called the Traveler. I had the entire Bloomberg in a box. You know, it's now in the Bloomberg Museum. I was the first one. So I go around the world with the Bloomberg.
I quit my first job to become a digital nomad 31 years ago. So, and it made no sense. Why with a laptop and the internet to sit in an office? But today, the world comes to you through that laptop or just phone.
Through your phone. Yeah.
And that allows us as both consumers and business people to be more involved in influencing the future. How do you encourage people to think individually, as well as investors and managers, about the direction we want to point our society? And how can they have that influence? What's the best way for me or anybody to change the path of the economy?
It's a very big question. I just find a little piece of the apple. I do mentor a lot of young people on sustainable finance. I've been doing that for 25 years because I have a very simple metric. We're not going to make this transition without knowledge capital. Yeah. And that resides in young people. So it's mostly young women. So a lot of my former interns and mentees, one's the co-manager of the World Bank's Disruptive Technology Fund. So she's done very well. I keep in touch with another one, has a company called Hevo Power, which is wireless recharging of EVs. He actually made me sign an NDA in my classroom at Columbia, and we launched the company there. So it's kind of nice to see success stories, and I have several others. So I've been doing it more on a teaching mentorship level. I've also been on the boards of two universities, Bard College's MBA in Sustainability and University of Michigan's Herb Institute for Global Sustainable Enterprise. So I've kind of put a lot of time in with the young people. Here's my joke, and you'll get it. I have a call option on young people. So they're inheriting this world, and I'm here to help them out. That's really what I do. I've done the same thing with government. I'm no longer a policymaker, but I was very active with the Bloomberg administration pro bono because I know things. I used to work in the mayor's office. And the private sector is just much more entrepreneurial. It's much, government's still risk averse. They just are. It's kind of in the DNA. Mm-hmm. And so you really kind of need those entrepreneurial chops. I've been in four startups. So it's like I was a policymaker and then I went to startups, and the laptop was the first startup. So they made me portable.
You mentioned the role of government is primarily a conservative one. Do we need that controller on progress? What's your thought on the role of government as we try to innovate our way out of the predicament we're in?
Well, here's the better news. So under the Biden administration, we got the CHIPS Act, we got the Climate Act, we got the infrastructure bill. That jump-started a lot of pent-up demand. I remember I had a surrogate in the White House in 2004 talk about infrastructure. No one was interested about infrastructure. So we got that done. That's good to jumpstart. The $400 billion now, Goldman's claiming that will be $1.2 trillion levered in the next 10 years through the climate bill. This is a good thing. But as I mentioned before, the real number is $250 trillion. So government can jumpstart some things, but here's the rub. Government should not pick technology winners. That's really what the markets do.
How do you see the role of media evolving? Because media is no longer the concentrated activity it used to be. It's distributed everywhere. And yet we all watch network TV or we watch online activity, including influencers on TikTok. How can the messaging that we do as participants in that global conversation be directed to the best outcome? What's your advice about how to, do we focus on the problems, focus on the opportunities? Where should we go?
Well, here's what we did, and I think we should focus on the opportunities. I think people are tired of hearing about problems. We have lots of problems, and climate change is a major mega trend problem, not going away. But this is what happened during Climate Week 5 years ago. Columbia University School of Journalism got 30 news organizations together to message Climate Week. That is why you see all this news coverage of climate 24/7. Didn't happen by accident. It was a very concerted effort. And who told me this was a PhD student meteorologist. And he says, I'm afraid they're going to do it for 1 week. No, it's all over. So if you could have a concerted effort, it's almost Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message. You just have to bang away at it. It's worked on climate. I think the next phase is more focus on opportunities and solutions. Because some of this stuff's long dated. It's not going to, for example, there's a nuclear renaissance now, SMR, small modularized reactors. And that's very long dated. I looked at a UK company. Here's the funny story. They had a magnet part, which is making money. And then they had the nuclear part. They should have just spun them off because one is an enterprise making money, but then you want to go and invest at least 10 years, maybe 12, 13 years. Because and everything I've seen on nuclear, I know the company approached recently nano nuclear power. Don't ask me how that works. So there's a lot of activity in the nuclear patch. Why? We won't talk about the mining. We won't talk about the waste disposal, but nuclear is the cleanest source of energy from a dispatch level.
Well, as you think about back over the 23 years you've been doing the show and been involved in these conversations, what trends do you see being most important to follow and understand over the course of the next decade, like decarbonization, the nuclear question you just raised, or carbon trading? Where should we be watching?
Well, here's my take on that. Most major corporations are not going to be carbon neutral by 2030, so they have to buy carbon credits. Now, there's two kinds of, I'll call them vintages of carbon credits. There's the compliance market, which is emitters, mostly stationary sources in California and the EU, et cetera, works very well because there's penalties for not complying, so you buy credits. Then there's the voluntary market, which has been having the big brouhaha because of the Guardian's article last year. But you need to see that the numbers that I've seen for sizing this market, this is from Wood Mackenzie out of Edinburgh, Scotland, $22 trillion commodity market, the largest commodity market ever created. So we're going to see, despite the controversy about carbon credits, and I've worked on projects in California, Costa Rica, in the EU, you go through a validation process, you have third-party verification companies who have no skin in the game. Their job is to verify the projects, and then you issue the credits. It's about a two-year process. So there's no quick fix here if you're going to do it right. Now, my game is, I don't think corporations want to buy, as the Brits call it, dodgy credits. Yeah. They want to buy, you know, the best credit, almost certified. And who I'm seeing come in to the carbon markets now are the insurance and reinsurance companies again. So Kita, which you've never heard of, is part of Lloyd's of London, Munich Re, Swiss Re. They were active a few decades ago, and now they're back. And so we're going to see insurance wraps on a lot of these projects that generate credits.
And those insurance wraps can finance a great deal of activity. I'm wondering, and of course, now we're referring back to the conversation earlier about the, we can sense so much of more what's going on in the economy. Are other natural resources like water or land going to change in their value and how we manage their value over the next few years? Is that something we will be surprised by?
Well, one thing is water is greatly underpriced. Yes, there are water rights markets in the US and Australia and Israel, but we underpriced water. Many years ago, I used to tell people water globally was a penny a barrel, a penny a barrel. It's way underpriced. So that's one of the problems. We are going to have more significant problems in rainfall, snowpack in many parts of the world. Desertification will continue. So that's, and then the fires. So there's all those problems. Land resources, I was working with a Canadian company in Peru to take distressed land, put biotech in, replenish land, pay the farmers, and then Amazon would buy the carbon credits. So it was like a perfect marriage, but as all startups go, it went sideways. The idea was good. It's just hard to execute on these things. So I have seen, believe it or not, hedge fund managers buy land in northern climates like northern Canada and in Africa. So people aren't stupid about land. We ain't making any more of it, and it's going to have to be more valuable. Now, for cities, it's a totally different metric. I think the game there is buildings. New York City, 75% of greenhouse gases are buildings, not cars, trucks, and buses and taxis. So it's really a different metric. So there we're seeing new technologies. They used to be called energy management systems. So now we have smarter buildings. People are still leaving the lights on, their computers on, things like that, very simple things, occupancy sensors. But they're getting a little more sophisticated now on actually measuring the carbon in the buildings. That's the next market for decarbonization.
And so how do you see the role of digital twins? In other words, virtual models of a building that knows everything going on in the building so that you can think about the impact of turning off those computers and turning off the lights at night and project the benefit, financial benefit of it, including the carbon credits that can be generated. Is that an area where there's a lot of entrepreneurial opportunity?
Yeah, I'm actually on an advisory board of a digital twin company in San Francisco. So yes, I think this is another great application. Makes a lot of sense to model and measure, because if you can't measure and manage, you know, you're nowhere. So the MRV market is also getting a lot of satellite imagery. We're starting to see better thinking there. There's a French company called Kairos, who's spoken at my event twice. They're not buying and launching satellites. They are buying capacity, much smarter play. And they have done very well in the energy patch. So they monitor like the Saudi industry for leaks of methane. And you can obviously have the same technology for agriculture. So I just think that, you know, it's my trinity is energy, food, and water. Energy is a $6 trillion business. Food's a $5 trillion business. Water is a $3 trillion business. And that's where a lot of these technology applications are going to go.
So my last question is, what advice would you give to a young entrepreneur who's thinking about entering any one of those markets? Where would you place your bet and how would you do it?
Two things, and I've done this with companies I'm on their advisory board. Get a strategic investor on board. So one of my companies is a reversible fuel cell company in Ohio. They got Shell Game Changers there. Why? Because you get alignment and they have greater resources than startups. That's the first thing. It's quite important. Second thing is really be more cognizant. And I've been a mentor. It's called Entrepreneur in Residence for Columbia Tech Ventures. And I've done that for 7 years. A lot of these companies have to look at addressable market, have to look at competition. I mean, I'm still a judge in the clean tech open in the Northeast, and I've seen people come out of MIT and we've got the greatest solution. Well, maybe you got a solution for there's no problem. You know, it's kind of a disconnect. So I think do your homework. The other thing smartest thinking I've seen is get some C-suite experienced serial entrepreneurs as mentors or advisors. I'm also looking at fractional CFOs, things like that. Are important because they have been to the rodeo before and they can help these tech entrepreneurs along.
So, Peter, tell us, how do we get involved and participate in Wall Street Green Digital on October 15th? What steps should our listeners take to sign
Very
up?
simple. Please go to the website, Wall Street Green Digital, and register. The registration button on the homepage. Very simple. Wall Street Green Digital.
Tell us what's going to happen on the 15th.
We kick this off in Singapore, noon their time, midnight New York time, and it'll be an interesting ride of a lot of great people. I've got a friend coming in. She's coming from Okinawa. She's going to be talking about green hydrogen hubs, which is very topical in Asia as well as the US.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Peter.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
That was my conversation with Peter Fusaro. He's the founder of the Wall Street Green Conference, and he's going to be hosting the first online version of that event, Wall Street Green Digital, on October 15th, 2024. You can sign up to attend the 24-hour virtual conference that's going to feature speakers from cities around the world at wallstreetgreendigital.com. Wall Street Green Digital is all one word, no space, no dash, wallstreetgreendigital.com. Energy, food, and water. Peter named the foundations of human society, what we work to make available to ourselves and to our neighbors so that we can each live a peaceful and prosperous life. And each of these essential commodities are seeing rapid and often unsettling change. And the world order, which was built on petroleum, coal, and gas, is already giving way to a new regime of clean, renewable energy. As we measure more human activity, we can create powerful financial incentives to move from wasteful to sustainable, efficient lifestyles and business practices. The question is who will establish the rules and create the incentives for these new markets? That question will not be settled by one government or one industry because the world is too interconnected and tuned into these issues to allow them to make those decisions on their own. Instead, there's a great negotiation underway, and it's led by innovators and policymakers who ultimately answer to every individual citizen when they make a choice at the grocery store, a car dealership, in the voting booth, or at home each and every day. It's time to learn as much as you can and jump into that debate. I'll be attending the Wall Street Green Digital Conference to hear and talk with a global audience about the many paths forward, and I encourage you to take a moment and check out that event. And I also hope you'll take a moment to share this podcast or any of the more than 480 interviews that we produced on sustainability in your ear with your friends, your family, or your coworkers. Writing a review on your favorite podcast platform helps your neighbors find us. Folks, you're the amplifiers that help us spread more ideas to create less waste. So tell everyone you meet that we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, or wherever they get their podcasts. Thanks for your support. I'm Mitch Ratcliffe. This is Sustainability in Your Ear, and we will be back with another innovator interview soon. In the meantime, folks, take care of yourself, take care of one another, and let's all take care of this beautiful planet of ours. Have a green day.